This is WATD Radio with Michelle Hager from Blue Cirrus Consulting. She's our co-host and our show sponsor. And wow, you and Iris really burned it up on telehealth and the importance of critical data. How far can we go with telehealth, Michelle?
You're so funny, Joe. Iris was great. She's full of so much knowledge and experience. I love talking to her. But who do we have up next?
Oh, great question. Our second guest is Dr. Jimmy McElliott. Dr. McElliott is the Executive Medical Director for the Center for Telehealth at MUSC, Medical University of South Carolina. The MUSC Center for Telehealth was recognized as one of the National Telehealth Centers of Excellence, as awarded by the Health Resources and Services Administration, HRSA, and an agency of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. MUSC was awarded this for their successful telehealth programs with a high annual volume of telehealth visits, substantial service to rural and medically underserved populations through telehealth, and its financially sustainable telehealth models.
Hi, Jimmy. Sorry if you don't mind me calling you Jimmy.
No, that's what they all call me. That's what the kids call me. I'm a pediatrician by day, so.
That's great. And this is my home state of South Carolina, so glad to have you on to support the work that we do here in South Carolina.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you all.
Yes, and my daughter is attending College of Charleston, and she's has her apartment on Vandy, 61 Vandy. You might be familiar with that street.
Absolutely.
But thank you for taking the time to speak with us tonight, and please tell us, how is MUSC doing with their telehealth programs post-pandemic, or we've been starting to say endemic, we are saying here on the radio?
Quickest thing to say is job security for me. It's busy, you know. We thought we were doing a lot of telehealth and innovation before, and we were doing a lot of work focusing on rural and underserved populations, trying to reach out to them, but, you know, that's so 2019, you know, 2020 and 2021, it's a new game. Large percentages of healthcare are being delivered remotely, trying to figure out how to do it well, efficiently, how to not leave certain populations behind, make sure it's not just an urban phenomenon, and those kind of things. But it's just here, just like in most health systems across the country, it's part of regular business now, and you really got to get up to speed. And so we're charging along. We're trying to, you know, build a plane in mid-flight what the pandemic has brought in terms of folks wanting to connect virtually without having to go places in person. And so it's full charge ahead, really.
Absolutely. You know, MUSC has a great reputation, obviously, as Joe mentioned, is already named as the Center of Excellence for Telehealth. There's only two in the country, for folks to be aware of that as well. But what do you think the secret sauce is for the work that you guys do at MUSC? How is it that you're able to be so successful, not only in the state, but across the country in the work that you're doing?
Yeah, we're lucky in our state, Michelle, that the government saw value in it, right? So they did put investments in. You have to call that out, that not every place is lucky as us. And then we were able to get that federal designation to support our efforts and look to study it. But I think if you look back and you want to pick a differentiator, I think I would say, we really weren't necessarily focused on the technology. I was never really a technology person. I really just was trying to take, my academic interest was in underserved children. I could study that all I wanted, but I couldn't do anything about it. And so I think really keeping the purpose of what you're doing, what you're trying to change, the problem you're trying to solve. I know that's how you coach folks.
Yeah.
That really taking that to the, and centering your core on that, not getting distracted by the fancy technology you get to play with, and really focusing on, are you building something to solve the problem, and can you do it at scale? You know, you can't, seeing 10 patients and patting yourself on the back only goes so far these days. You need to do something that can do thousands of patients, thousands of visits, to really make the difference you're trying to make. And it's got to be patient friendly a little more than health system friendly. That's a little funny to say, but the health system usually restrict, the reason you don't have an Uber of healthcare, people like to say, is because health systems are complex. They got a lot of rules and regulations. They say they put the patients first, but they have a hard time doing that. So trying to make it user friendly and focusing on the goal and focusing on the true stakeholder, and that is the person you're trying to serve, I think we really tried to stay true to that in our state and in our work here. And I'm hopeful that has been a differentiator.
Patient focused.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Dr. McElliott, I know you were working on this open access network, a statewide approach to deploying an interoperable open access telehealth network across multiple health systems in South Carolina. How is that going?
That's a good question. You know, where we set out, we kind of envisioned, you know, a common platform and technology, like they do some of this in Ontario and places like that. And so we, in certain areas, in certain places, in certain services, inpatient or outpatient, we have been able to support common technology. I think, you know, like South Carolina is similar to other places where healthcare is competitive, and but there are also good, well-meaning folks that are trying to serve populations. We've been able to keep a group together of the larger health systems in the state and the Medicaid and the Department of Mental Health collectively working on an annual strategy. So while they may make different decisions, there may be, they may join together on technology decisions and those kind of things. The one thing that we have been able to do consistently is keep everybody at the table to fill in the gaps in care collectively and agree to sort of divide and conquer. Kind of the early example was at the beginning of this effort, getting to be like 8 years or so or more now, was, you know, getting expert stroke care was really important for the smaller community hospitals throughout the state. And we were able to make sure that everyone, every citizen in the state could get expert stroke care really fast as we could by partnering with all the hospitals in the state from small to big and doing the best we can. So that's an example of like just banding together. You pick up those, we pick up these, let's cover the state. And that's what we've achieved. Still ongoing work to make it functionally work all together and to make it efficient, cost efficient, and those kind of things. But we're proud of the fact that we've stayed together.
You know, it's a common story. You mentioned that it's rural, it's underserved population. And in our state, as you're well aware, we've had hospitals close. And you mentioned the stroke program, and that was absolutely necessitated by the fact that hospitals were closing and then patients were not able actually able to access stroke care within that golden hour of time to be able to best treat them and get the best outcomes. So, you know, kudos to you for that, for you and your team and the folks at MUSC, along with other people in the state, to make that notice that ahead of time and forge ahead with that that program. It's definitely saved lives, certainly in the state of South Carolina. I'm sure in other areas where they have that as well.
Definitely.
Some of the things that you mentioned there was keeping those groups together. And I know there's something unique in South Carolina that we have is the Telehealth Alliance that you chair, the South Carolina Telehealth Alliance co-chair with Kathy Schwarting, who we've also had on the show. We really enjoy her. She's an entertaining speaker always. And so I think people would be interested to know, what's the composition of that group? How did you coalesce that group together? What was kind of the evolution of that? Or others, what advice would you give to other states that might be trying to do something similar?
Well, you know, the beginning was definitely a lot of discussions and negotiations going on. I think, you know, it would took a few years to even get trust to have a plan together. So I think one is just patience and persistence. You know, I was lucky that my institution was charged with it, that we would receive some state funding, but we also had to dole it out, right? So that built, had a lot of trust building early on, and that we'd have to demonstrate that we would do that, that we'd all come together. I think since then, you know, I think other states have plans, strategic plans, and other states have funding. It's not everywhere. And in this day and age, you really need reimbursement more than anything else and things like that. But what I would say is that it's somewhat painful, but also rewarding that we refresh our plan every year or every 18 months or so. And that's a lot, you know, to get big health systems together or big initiatives together and have them come back, report back and say what they're going to tweak and do differently, and not a 5-year plan, but like every year, and they expect it to pull people back together. It really kind of brings us, you know, it keeps the focus on the patient and the problem a lot. And I would say while it takes a lot of work, that part probably is really important if you're really going to keep playing nice in the sandbox with competing health systems and partnership. You really got to keep them coming back.
In fact, Luceris was part of our event, Telemedicine Compliance Congress, back in January. And Dr. McElliott, you were the host. I thought you did a great job dealing with technology and timing all of the speakers. In person would have been great, but you made it work virtually. And it seemed there was a strong message supporting telehealth to educate our state legislators and providing how important telehealth is to the future of healthcare and proving that access to healthcare is important. And we've had Senator O'Connor on supporting that. We've had Kyle Zebley on from ATA, and ATA will be here in Boston in May. Everyone's excited about it. What did you think of the Compliance Congress virtual conference? What did you get out of that?
Well, thanks for the kind words. I got tons out of it. And just the focus on trying to figure out all the details of how to do this was great, to have a whole conference dedicated just to that. And it was probably sounds boring to a lot of people, but for those of us, we've been a long time coming to really dive into the details and have national speakers talking about it. So I think it was great. It was timely. And it's important to keep the dialogue going. You know, I think for the legislators and those folks and their constituents, I think there's always been a nervousness, right? If you do virtual care, you're going to blow the whole health system up. You're going to do so much. Everyone's going to get so much health care that the whole thing's going to implode. And a lot of people don't realize that a lot of the rules and regulations were built off of that fear. There was a true fear 10, 15 years ago that drove legislation to actively restrict to be able to do these things. And that's what we're living with now. And it's flipped during the pandemic. And now people are scrambling to say, all right, we actually didn't blow anything up. So actually things got better. People got more access. Cost has gone down. Right. There's a lot of factors there. Pandemic, not the least of them, right? That people were afraid to go to healthcare. And so there's a lot to sort out, but it's been long enough now that all the volumes we're just talking about in South Carolina, Medicare, Medicaid, those agencies, they got millions and millions of data points talking about how much is happening. You can't say there's no data anymore. And you can't say that the whole thing's going to blow up. So there's a lot of things to work out and details to work out. But I would just, so we've seen bipartisan support. It's not a partisan issue, which is rare these days, which is
right.
Thank goodness.
But how to get it done and how brave to be, I would just say, what more do you need? We got data, get it done, get the studies done. You know, the wheels aren't falling off, and this is a way to access healthcare, and why would you restrict it? So that would be my pitch, is just to say, you know, it's okay, be brave. let's take care of patients. Don't put too many restrictions, because that was not even so 2019. That was so 2008, when they thought the world was going to blow up if we did this. So.
You're absolutely right. They thought costs were going to go out of control. What's interesting is, I think the other silver lining, if there's anything out of the pandemic outside of telehealth, which all of us that have been doing this for so long see that as a silver lining, but also as a pediatrician yourself, the focus now on pediatric behavioral health care and its connection with telehealth, being able to provide care from home. And so there are some big advances there and how important that is. Have you, in your practice, have you experienced that? Have you seen that? What stories can you share?
Yeah, no, it lends it so well to counseling and therapies and things. So I will say that while I, you know, do a lot of this job, and so I practice, we certainly manage ADHD and in my clinic via telehealth a lot and other things. But I think where the biggest change has been, the mental health professionals are doing the majority of their business from a distance now. Patients aren't having to come in, and families with their children out of their environments, you know, into areas that are called psych areas that hold a stigma to them, and they can get care in where they live and they breathe and they work, and adapt their therapy to their life so much better that we've seen a huge flip. So 80% in a lot of places of care happening on the mental health and behavioral health front is remotely. And so people just aren't having to go in anymore. And so that went from basically just a few percentages to 80% in the last 2 years. So Yeah, it's a game changer, absolutely, for that profession and for those kids and for those who need. And that's the one area that I would say you might have a mini riot if you tried to take that back. So, like, it makes too much sense. Why would you do that to people? And, you know, it extends to folks, firefighters and policemen and things like that, that have a lot of risk for PTSD and those kind of things. And, you know, there's a lot of stigma with those type of folks and professions to actually get care. Teenagers, you know, people who won't access care if it's not super easy and private. And so I think it's truly a game changer.
Yeah, good point. Good point. Joe, I could talk forever on that. Keep us honest here.
I know it. No, we're talking to Dr. Jim McElliott from he's the executive medical director for the Center for Telehealth at MUSC Medical University of South Carolina. And this interview is showing how much experience and knowledge him and his team has gone through to build up their telehealth program. And my question for Dr. McElliott is to help us understand some of the implementation challenges around telehealth and formulating a budget. And when everything has been sort of built around a face-to-face visit, can you give us some advice and what worked for you?
Yeah, you know, it depends on your environment, of course, who you work for, where you are and those kind of things, what kind of support people are investing. But I think the best thing to say is thinking outside of the box in your value case, you know, what matters. And if you do something innovative that's different in healthcare, you're likely to put yourself in a place where it's not straightforward. Great business plan all the time. It depends on what you're trying to do, right? If you're just trying to make money, sure, you'll go right after that. But if you're trying to serve pregnant women that are, you know, have high mortality in one area and those big problems, you typically will need to have multiple stakeholders at the table and multiple contributors early on while you build a case and show that you can be effective. And so I think you have to sort of build a coalition and think about, oh, who appreciates this? Who's going to help me do it? And go from there. It would be great if everything you did and tried to serve a certain area, whatever, immediately had a good pro forma and business plan. But the truth is that probably would have been done already if that was the case, right? So if serving underserved children in rural South Carolina was a profitable business, you'd have people out there doing it. And so you have to try to be as efficient and cost effective as possible. You have to try to work with your payers. You're probably also going to have to pull the community together. You're probably going to talk to your health system leaders and make sure that everybody's aligned and there's the will to do this. So that's a long-winded answer to say, you know, who cares about it and who's going to contribute? And you got to do that right up front. And then you got to prove it and you can't sit on your heels. You got to earn their trust and keep going and keep your payer Medicaid at the table and all these kind of people. So it's a labor of love, but it depends on how outside the box you're trying to do care, right? And with telehealth, sometimes you are.
Yep. I totally agree with that. So one thing that made me think of this when you were talking through that answer is this idea of health equity. You know, if we had, you know, if it was profitable to take care of kids in rural South Carolina or in rural Florida or any other underserved populations, then we'd already have, you know, a lot of care in those areas. And now what we can see is telehealth improving the ability to improve health equity across all spectrums and determinants of health that are affecting folks. One thing I wanted to ask about, because this is what we're coming into, is around this idea of digital literacy, because we found that some of these underserved populations really don't have as much technology at their fingertips or in their homes. How have you been able to, overcome that and still take care of those patients?
Well, it's a big challenge, you know, and you mentioned Kathy Schwarting, her group, her nonprofit group, Pomo Care Connections in our area is focusing on that. We're encouraging that and supporting that as best we can, literally going out and training people and getting people equipment. Patient by patient, support by support. I think it's a big area of focus. You know, you're talking about budget and funding. You know, you don't need a building anymore when you do lots of telehealth, but you do need resources to support people so they can do it. Elderly people, people without bandwidth, you know, all these kind of things, they shouldn't not be able to access care in this new era. I'd say it's a big work in progress. I've seen other health systems making some good things with Spanish-speaking patients and making some good efforts there that we need to tag on to. I've seen our nonprofits in our area really equipping libraries, doing lots of good work that we're supportive and trying to partner with. But it's a long road. I do think that we're charging forward towards exacerbating inequities in access to care when they originally was set out to do the opposite. So it'll be an area of focus for us. I don't know if we have dedicated staff trying to help people. We have dedicated teams to help someone if they can't get in their visit or have technical problems. But in terms of elevating patients' level of education, how to use their technology, it's a work in progress. The infrastructure is just now being put together, but instead of paying for a building, we should pay for that.
Yeah, right.
Good point.
And I know Michelle and her Blue Sarah's team of consultants is up here in Massachusetts working in Brockton at Signature Health. And they are doing an incredible job of putting stakeholders, key stakeholder interviews together and sorting out technologies. And it's a big process and it's a big scope of work. And language barriers is definitely something that is a challenge to telehealth. That we found in Lawrence, Massachusetts, at their ACO. So we're well equipped to handle those challenges. And it's definitely something that you have to overcome as a healthcare system to have a proper.
I was trying to get some tips from Jimmy, Joe. I was trying to get some tips.
I know. And he gave us some great tips. And you certainly have your strategies are working as well here in Brockton, Massachusetts, only 8 miles away. So.
Honestly, I think it's an area where we all have to put our differences aside across health systems and share. I don't know that anybody's cracked it completely.
Right.
I do think people need to be caring about it. And I do see that happening. I just don't know that anybody's got figured out. You should have this staff member helping people, or you should be doing this person doling out phones. I don't know yet, but it's some people are doing in pockets clever things.
Kathy, you mentioned it. Kathy's doing some good stuff. I really appreciated her. You know, let's teach them how to get to Pinterest and Facebook or whatever recipes they need to have and whatever it takes just to get to that level of digital literacy.
Yeah, we've had Kathy on the show from Palmetto. Is it Palmetto Care Connections?
Yeah,
and correct. She is great. The Southern accent, how she stands up for her son and in completing homework assignments when they're working remote. I love her presentation, but you certainly are a great guest as well, Dr. McElliott. And we're talking with Dr. Jimmy McElliott from MUSC. Thank you for your time tonight, Dr. McElliott. Our show's goal is to bring our listeners, educated and established doctors like yourself, nurses and healthcare workers, in to speak with us. So if you want, we always want to provide our listeners the latest information on healthcare, not only locally, but on a national level. If you're interested in learning more about Blue Sarah's and the world of digital health, you can find this interview and more on our website, blue-sarah.com. That's blue like the color, -sarah like the cloud.com. Thank you, Dr. McElliott.
My pleasure. Thank you all. Thanks for the good work you're doing.
Thank you, Jimmy. It was great to see you. It was a lot of fun to talk to you.
Likewise. Thanks for inviting me on.
This is Blue Sarah's Radio on WATD 95.9 FM. Have a good night.